Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio. I want to know if you ever pay attention to anyone else's work as far as ascension is concerned.
Yes, absolutely, I do. I could not have written this book had it just been me doing my thing. So, but to me, the most important thing, K-Town, is that this is totally a labor of love. I don't write about anything that I'm not deeply interested in myself. And so the great thing is I would be doing it just for its own sake. And of course, I keep digging and digging, and lo and behold, I've got information to make a book. So it really is the best of both worlds for me.
And yours is really, really interesting. I want to know, since you've put it out, what kind of reception have you been getting from your readers? What kind of reviews and things have you been getting?
The most common comment I've gotten is, I just couldn't put the book down. And that's exactly the way I feel about it. I'm appearing on a lot of different podcasts, and so in order to stay up to speed, I just keep rereading my book, and I like it better every time I read it. So it really has captured my imagination, and that's the only way I can write about anything.
One thing I was wanting to tell you is that, I was surprised. I'm going through your book, and you mentioned David Icke. I was just talking to someone else about him, and I was like, man, they really gave him a hard time when he first came out. And he was pummeled by everyone. It was awful the way they talked about him. And, I was like, poor guy, is he ever going to quit saying this? But he never did. He just pushed on. And then slowly but surely, it seemed like, consensus changed and people started to really pay attention to what he was saying. And then I saw him lecture at Oxford, and I thought, wow, that is a huge, huge change. A contrast to what he was getting. They really seemed to be listening and paying attention and taking him seriously at that point. And then before you know it, he was touring and filling up these big auditoriums and things like that. Did you ever go see him speak?
Yes, I did. Way, way back in the day, K-Town, in 1995. This is when David Icke first came out with really a great book. I think it's called "And the Truth Shall Set You Free." And so it was just, my book was new too. The first edition of Nothing in This Book Is True, but it's exactly how things are. And I was invited to come down and meet him before he went on. And this was a small group. There was maybe 50 people or so. So this was before he caught on. But that book really, really captivated me. I just sat there in just awe. How does this guy know all this stuff? How is he able to get it all down? And it all resonated with me because I had been researching this stuff deeply since at least 1990, much of it since 1980. So, yeah, you're right. David Icke now fills up huge auditoriums and he gives day-long lectures, and he's certainly gotten his voice out there. Yes, and I did refer to him in my book. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I have one that's like, it's literally like an 8 or 10 hour lecture. This is just unbelievable. This is so long. He opened a lot of eyes. And so I'm just amazed by what the guy says. And I don't know how he got his information. I think he talks about early on. I do recommend anyone that wants to, follow him, listen to his early interviews about how he actually got the downloads of information. It's mind boggling. Tell me, let's start off with your book here. It's Catching the Ascension Wave, Everything You Need to Know About the Coming Great Awakening. So give us just an overview about it.
Yeah. Well, the overview would be that there is an enormous infusion, if you will, of galactic energy that is very high vibratory energy. I like to call it fourth dimensional energy. It's the energy of unity. It's the energy of unconditional love. It's the energy of joyfulness, inner peace, and creativity and inspiration, and all of that. And so it's coming in. And I'm not just saying this in the book. I'm documenting it as best as I can to really lay it down. And what it's doing, K-Town, it's creating a displacement process. And what I mean by that is that anything that you and I are holding on to, well, let me put it this way. I'll just back up what I'm saying a little bit. There's a whistleblower by the name of Corey Good, whom I refer to in my book on actually numerous occasions.
I know who you're talking about, the guy that talks about having leaving the planet and install everything on Gaia. I think that's where he used to be there, but he's not on Gaia anymore.
Yeah, Corey Good is the guy who claims that he spent 20 years in the secret space program in the U.S. Navy's Solar Warden program, and that he was time-traveled and put back into his body, and his memories were erased. Somehow he was able to retrieve those memories, and I don't know if he ever said how. If he did, I didn't catch that. But anyway, Corey Good talks in great detail about the secret space program because allegedly he was there for 20 years. And what he says is that the scientists in the secret space program are well aware of this, what they call a galactic superwave. And it's moving through our galaxy. It has multiple layers. It's a great dust cloud, if you could. And so they've flown craft out there. And to be very simple about it, the energy had a very positive impact on the people who were positive of the crew, but those who were not so positive, they became a bit more negative. And so the point being then is that as it goes through the solar systems, it acts as a catalyst to get people to wake up and to deal with their karma and their dramas, either that or be consumed by it. And what that means, to complete the thought that I began a few moments earlier, is that the collective darkness is coming to the surface. And so this is not a bad thing. This is a good thing. It's a very necessary thing because we've been asleep. There's no other way to say it, for a long, long time. And we need to wake up. We're being told in no uncertain terms that the time is now because we're beginning to interface with the higher dimensional reality of fourth dimensional consciousness. And like I suggested earlier, that's the higher vibratory rate of unconditional love and creativity and inspiration and compassion and all the good things. And it's creating this displacement process where the denser vibratory rates of, you know, anxiety, fears, depressions, resentment, frustration, guilt, and shame, et cetera, et cetera. All this is coming to the surface. And so the opportunity is unprecedented to deal with not only the karmic, in our lifetime, but perhaps many, many lifetimes worth of karma in order to prepare us for ascension into the higher world, the fourth dimension or the fourth density. And I just make the case for this is not something that's going to be happening in the future. This is something that's going on right here and right now.
All right. So you said a lot that I'm flipping through your book at the same time. Let me ask you something. Okay. So I have heard that we are ascending to a different plane of existence,
yeah,
so to speak. Are there forces trying to keep us from making that transition?
Oh boy, that's to put it mildly. Yeah, there sure are. And that's just a fascinating discussion. I have one chapter in the book called Cosmic History. And in that chapter, I just talk at some length about the ancient builder race. Now, the ancient builder race goes back 2.6 billion years to Venus. And this is when Venus went fourth dimensional. And at the time, there were only 38 million inhabitants on Venus, and 6 million of them went through. So what happened to the other 32 million is another story. They were taken to another third dimensional planet where they were given an opportunity to work out their karma and learn their lessons and ultimately prepare for ascension. But the ancient builder race, they came to Earth and established a colony, a city in Antarctica, which at the time, 2.6 billion years ago, was not covered by 2.5 miles of ice. It was probably a pretty nice place. I don't know. Then they ventured out into the solar system, but not just our solar system. They ventured out into the local 52-star cluster, and these people became six-dimensional beings. I mean, that's a level of awareness, K-Town, that we can't even really imagine that. There is no separation. They're just they're really just one unit acting in harmony, in total harmony with all the laws of the universe. Very, very, very positive beings and very extremely advanced. Well, they were able to. Through their pretty ingenious technology, they were able to keep the peace throughout the 52 local star cluster for about 2 billion years. And that is until about 500,000 years ago, when a race of beings from within our solar system, somehow they took on negativity, and they kind of hijacked this system that the Venusians, the people from Venus, were and they turned it into a defense, into an offensive shield. So they weren't interested in keeping the peace. They were interested in going to war, and so they did.
Are you talking about the reptilians?
No, these are the beings from Maldek, also known as Tiamat, which is now the asteroid belt circling in our solar system between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. So what happened? It was a giant planet, and now it's an asteroid belt. Well, they weren't quite as smart as they thought they were, and they mistimed things. This is just about as bad as you could. Ended up completely destroying their planet, and also their moon, which happened to be Mars, which at the time was not a planet. Rather, it was a moon circling Maldek. Well, Mars got destroyed too, and it became the planet, our next-door neighbor. But the point being is that these people, and there was a whole lot of them, they had to go somewhere. Obviously, their planet was gone, and so many of them were brought to planet Earth. And to cut to the quick on this, what it means is that we had a bunch of backstabbing misfits coming in and becoming part of our evolutionary process. Well, this set it back dramatically. And then you couple that with the people from Mars doing the same thing. So to say that we have become a planet of misfits and backstabbers is really an understatement. And that has held us back a whole lot. But there are other factors that are holding us back, too. I don't know if you want to get into that or not.
And so, okay, it's the first time. Okay, you're talking about Maldek, like, you know, I mean, I've heard it every, I think even Linda Moulton Howe said something like that. And Dr. George King, he was back, and I think it was like 60s or 50s or 60s or something like that. He started channeling some beings, and he says that human beings came from Maldek. We destroyed it. Something happened. And then in the reincarnation process, I guess humanity got permission to reincarnate on Earth again.
No, originally they are from Maldek, and so, but they've been here for 500,000 years.
I know. Actually, when you say they, are they us? Are they?
Well, they've become us.
They become
let's
us.
It, let's,
okay.
Let's put it that way. You know, I'm just cutting over the surface on all of this. I've got a whole chapter on this, and one of the basic. One of my basic sources is a document called The Law of One. Now, one of the reasons I introduced us to the ancient builder race, the people from Venus, is because they are the Law of One. They wrote the Law of One. It's just this collective energy, this collective entity that is collectively known as Ra. And Ra wrote the Law of One, first introduced it to the 18th dynasty in Egypt, but as they say, with very limited success. And it was reintroduced to us back in 1981. It is channeled information. I don't usually put a lot of, I don't usually pay much attention to channeled information, but this is absolutely an exception. The Law of One is just too good. It is real. I Absolutely.
Where did you get it from? I mean, where can we read it, or where did you get that channeled information from?
Oh, go online. Go to loveone.org. I first discovered it way back in the early 1990s. In my other book, Nothing in This Book is True, I talk in great detail about Akhenaten's Mystery School back in the 18th dynasty. It was called the Law of One. And so after doing the research of what I knew on the mystery school, I decided to take a deeper look and find out about the Law of One. And what I discovered is that there's a series of books called The Law of One. And so you can either buy the books or you can go to lawofone.org and you've got the whole thing right there. And it's some pretty fascinating stuff. And so what the Law of One says about Maldek and about Mars is really my main source of information here. And I do trust what they say. And this is basically what they said, is that they became infiltrated by negativity. That's kind of an understatement. And in so doing, in their attempt to go out and conquer other worlds, they ended up destroying their planet. Whoops, sorry. That's just the way it goes, guys, sometimes.
Very interesting. And this really brings to mind another guest that I had on the show. I don't know if you've heard about her, Sophia Love. She was getting channeled information from some being called the One or something, the One. When I did my interview with her, she can't articulate. I mean, she's a bright woman, but she can't articulate what she channeled. And it's just mind boggling. It's astonishing. And I think maybe I have a PDF copy of that. I'll send it to you so you can read it. But it's all about ascension and It's just incredible. The book's incredible, and I'm very surprised that it's not, you know, people haven't talked about it more. Okay, so let me go to your book here. You talk about you should see your book. It has a ton of markers and everything in it. I'm telling you, I want to take you all over.
I should see your copy of it.
Yeah, it's got stuff everywhere. Let's talk about lifting the veil. Okay, so you said this wave of energy is washing over us and people are starting to awaken to things, what kind of, maybe people are just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be awaking to. You know, what am I supposed to be seeing or feeling or experiencing? Uh-huh. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I sure can. Well, let's start with the fact that you and I, as an individual and collective consciousness, have been lied to for a long, long time in just about every way possible. I'll back that up a little bit. One of my many sources for the book was a guy named William Tompkins, who at the age of 93, back in about 2015, he wrote a book called Selected by Extraterrestrials. And in that book, he revealed that he had been a contactee by a race of ETs that we know as the Nordics ever since childhood, and that he had been in telepathic communication with them ever since. But as a very young man during World War II, goodness sakes, he couldn't have been much more than 18 or 20. But he was put in charge of a group of spies, 23 of them, who had infiltrated the German secret space program. Now, to unpack that just a little bit, the Germans, the Nazis, had been contacted by these Draeker reptilians back in the 1930s. And the Draecos made a deal with them, say, look, we'll give you all the technology. We'll give you brand new ships. I mean, anti-gravity ships that will enable you to travel to the far reaches of the galaxy. And all we want in return is, you know, a little assistance. Well, you know, one dark force collaborating with another one, you can pretty well imagine what the form of assistance would take. So anyway, the Germans had a back in Antarctica. So underneath the ice, there's a whole lot going on in Antarctica. The Draeker reptilians have a colony there, and the Nazis to this very day have a colony going there where they got their secret space program going. Well, getting back to William Tompkins, in the U.S. Navy, there were 23 spies, if you will, who had successfully infiltrated the German space program, and William Tompkins was in charge of collecting this information. And of course, what he got back was rather mind-boggling. You got to remember, this was the 1940s, and the Germans had already been to the moon and to Mars and to the neighboring planets. Hello. Now, we haven't been told that, have we? Lie number one. But it just goes on and on and on. William Tompkins said it very succinctly. Basically, what he said is that what you and I think, I'm paraphrasing, what you and I think we know, everything, virtually everything, if not everything, that you and I have been taught is a lie. And he just went on and on and on to detail it. So that's a starting point right there.
Yeah, he even mentioned stuff about even like our mathematical, the way we, you know, calculate, you know, math and things like, it's all a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's all a lie. It's all an illusion. And so Nikola Tesla, back in the early 20th century, tried to give us free energy, most brilliant scientist we've ever had. J.P. Morgan said, well, I'll let you know when we're ready. I guess we're still not ready. And so, we have the capability of completely cleaning up the planet. We have the capability of traveling not only throughout this galaxy, but to other galaxies, and it is being done in the secret space program. I mean, I could just go on and on with this, K-Town, but that ought to give us some sense of just what lifting the veil might speak to. And I get off to chapter one with a real bang, where I go into the details of the secret space program and tell how the Nazis in 1952, most of us who have done any research into UFOs have all heard of, in 1952, there was a bunch of UFOs circling the Capitol. Well, what I found out is that they were not ETs, they were Germans. And what they were doing was sending a signal to our government. They wanted to merge, and they wanted to give us their technology in exchange for, we've heard of Operation Paperclip. And so they wanted to be able to merge in and to kind of covertly, you might say, take over our government. And that's exactly what happened. We waited 3 years. It wasn't until 1955 when this treaty was signed, and that got the secret space program going on our side. It got it going. So we've been there and we've done that. And yet we're told that all we have is tin can technology that is somehow capable of going to the moon. Yet if somebody can tell me, if anybody can tell me how the Apollo space program got through the 25,000 miles of the,
belt?
Radiation belt. Van Allen belt. So you had to have at least 6 feet of lead casing in order to get through there, and the Apollo didn't have it. I think going to the moon back in the Apollo program is an illusion. It didn't really happen. And so this is what we're told. This is our technology. We're told we have the internal combustion energy. We're not told that we have the technology to create hover cars totally pollution-free and to you can just go on and on with this. So that's, that's kind of giving you a sense of what I mean by lifting the veil.
Oh, okay. So I have to take you back here because you mentioned, you're right. And William Tompkins, I have his books, as a matter of fact, and I'll be giving some of his books away. I've got several copies to be giving them away to listeners. Let me ask you this. Operation, you mentioned, let's go back to Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla. Okay, so someone, I don't know where I heard it, something about they believed he was from Venus. So, and they said they saw some paperwork or whatever on the FBI's website. It's supposed to be like a dump or whatever. So I get on there and I look and I find it. Okay, so they have the official document there on the FBI.gov website where they go through the whole spiel that they believe that he came from Venus. And that he was left here for some reason, don't know why. But they start talking about him and his inventions and things like that. I was going to ask you, do you believe that he was from another planet.
Well, that's very interesting. He did say that he was getting his information from off planet. Of course, nobody believed him, but he could well be from Venus. And to unpack that just a little bit, K-Town, if you look at Venus on the third dimensional level, there's not much going on there. Average surface temperature is about 850 degrees Fahrenheit. The atmosphere is filled with sulfuric acid from all the volcanic activity. And, you probably wouldn't want to spend much time there. Yet on the fourth dimension, Venus is very alive and very well. It's populated by the Hathor race. I'm sure they're descendants of the ancient builder race, and they are the most conscious entities in the solar system. Furthermore, Venus on the fourth dimensional levels is headquarters. You want to come into our solar system, you got to check in with Venus first, check in with the Hathors. So yeah, that kind of adds up. But the great thing about Tesla said, if it's so clearly and so succinctly, yet so simply, if you want to understand the universe, think of it in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. And if you begin to see it in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration, now you can get off the dime and you can begin to move. And you begin to realize that the base foundation of this reality is waveform, which is vibrating energy. And within waveform, you can store fantastic amounts of information. Furthermore, you begin to come to the realization that it's all an illusion. As Einstein said, reality is an illusion, albeit a persistent one.
Yeah,
he was right there.
He's exactly right there. And I want to go back and Bob and talk about the wave of energy that's washing over us, because you did say that, for people, I guess people that have, good hearts and souls and things, that they seems to me that you were saying like they become better people, I guess. And then the people that are, mean or whatever, not so good, that this wave of energy will make them worse? Is that what you said?
Okay. Well, what it's doing is creating a huge displacement process. And so you go back to Tesla, everything is energy, frequency, and vibration. And so what's coming in is higher dimensional energy is a shorter wavelength. It's a higher frequency. It's a much, much higher vibratory rate. Let me put it this way. When you and I are experiencing just unconditional love and we're just feeling great about everyone and everything, and the joyfulness is just, it's just feels like there's no end to it. You're vibrating at a very high rate. Yet when we go into fear, and when we go into revenge and get stuck in the lower, that's a very, very dense vibrating energy. And so that's the whole point. That is the higher vibratory energy when it comes in. And it's impacting everybody on this planet. Nobody is going to be able to escape this because it's the necessary prerequisite in order to get us ascension ready. And so what it's doing is creating this displacement process where it's bringing to the surface the lower density, lower vibratory rate of resentment and fear and anxiety and depression and stuff like that. I go into great detail. I don't want to leave people hanging about, oh, gee, if you don't know how to deal with this, too bad for you. I go into the exact details on just exactly how to transmute this energy, because it absolutely is contained within each and every one of us. It's an innate ability we all have. And I feel that my job is to show us that it's there and then to show us how to use it. And that is how to transmute the lower vibratory energy of fear and resentment and, stress and anxiety and all that stuff, to transmute it into life-enhancing energy. And in so doing, dramatically raise its vibratory rate and dramatically raise your vibratory rate in the process, so that you shift from "I'll get even with you if it's the last thing I do" to you're just at peace, you're in harmony with life. And that is a very, I think, useful way of speaking of the transformation that we must make. There's just so much more that we can say here, Keitan, and I'm going to try and put some of these pieces together here. If we go back to Venus, I made the point where at the time, and this is according to the law of one, 38 million people, 6 million people made it into the fourth dimension, but what happened to the other 32 million? Well, they were not ascension ready, and they were taken to another third dimensional planet where they were given the opportunity for how many lifetimes it takes to work through their karma so that they too could become ascension ready. And working through your karma is really what I just laid out here. It's raising your vibratory rate so that you're now in harmony with life, so that you're emanating from inner peace and joyfulness and creativity and inspiration, rather than you're stuck in fear and depression and sadness and all that stuff.
Yes, yes. And you're saying that very thing is going to happen to us, and for those that are ready, we'll ascend, and those that aren't, they're going to be recycled to go and work off their karma.
Well, that's the most likely scenario. Yet, going back to the law of one, they say that is indeed the most likely scenario. And they also go on to say that, you know, because we have become a collection of misfits where people have come here from everywhere, when their planet was either destroyed or whatever happened to it, they had to go somewhere to another third dimensional planet. So they came here.
Yeah, but people are wondering, like, what is that? I mean, you say they're going to be recycled to another planet. What is that? Is that death, or what is that exactly?
Interesting question. Well, there is a book called Cosmic Voyage. It came out in 1996, and this absolutely backs up what the Law of One says. It was authored by a kind guy named Courtney Brown, who became a remote viewer. Now, initially, I didn't trust this very much because I remember one of the most frequent guests on Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell's show at the time, was this guy, everybody called him Dr. Doom, Major Ed Dames, who was a remote viewer, and he was talking about what we now know is the solar flash, where the sun increases and it just shoots a flash at the Earth, which is kind of a rough day for a third dimensional planet, because what it ends up doing is getting all the volcanoes to go off and ultimately burying the third dimensional aspect of that planet from 40 to 400 feet of rock. And so you wouldn't want to be here when that's going on. Well, the question then is, what happens? And Courtney Brown was able to remote view. By the way, I did some deeper research on remote viewing, and I discovered that the good remote viewers were up to 100% accurate in their terrestrial viewings and about 99% accurate in their off-planet viewings. So I just began to take a deeper look at Courtney Brown's work and just begin to accept it a bit more. And what he's saying is that one group of ETs that we're probably all familiar with, the Greys, one of their jobs is to exactly do that, to transport people who are not ascension ready to other third dimensional planets. And he gave the details of how he remote viewed a group of people who looked very much like they were from planet Earth, very much from the USA, in fact, and how they, in his remote viewing, were transported to a third dimensional planet in the Pleiades, and they were time traveled. Their DNA code was upgraded a bit, and they were given a body, a cloned body that was more able to handle the reality of this new third dimensional planet. And then they were time traveled. Well, he goes into all the detail of this, and it backs up perfectly what the Law of One says. So I'm thinking, well, we probably are onto something here. And so that is the most likely scenario, that there will be a group of people, who knows how many, who will be ascension ready. And for those who are ascension ready, when the shift happens, will be led through an amazing, it will be an amazing experience, to say the least, where you will be taken to a planet that is still planet Earth, but it's a higher vibrant vibratory rate version of planet Earth, a shorter wavelength that we refer to as fourth dimensional Earth or fourth density Earth. And so that's where everything is in harmony. Let's put it this way. Could you imagine ending up in a life where even where everything, and I'm talking about everything, is much, well, at least 100 times more harmonious than even your very best moments here that you've ever had in planet Earth? You know, where everything, you're just having the perfect day and everything is just, life is wonderful and it's fantastic. Well, could you imagine living a life where it's 100 times or at least more harmonious than even your very best moments here? That's what the law of one tells us is available for us in the fourth dimension.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this, and that's beautiful. Now I really hope if that's happening that all of us go. But I want to ask you this: you said there were beings trying to stop us from actually making this ascension. So what does that look like if that takes place?
Well, that's commonly called the cabal, the Illuminati, the dark forces, the deep state, whatever name you want to give them. There's a few thousand of them. They're basically the richest people on the planet. Nothing inherently evil about being rich. Depends on your motivation. Depends on how you use it. But if you're using it to control and conquer and keep the masses in the dark, then I'd say that you are definitely dark force. And they've been controlling us from behind the scenes for a long, long time. But with the enormous increase of the vibratory rate of this galactic super wave coming in, they're being forced out of the darkness. You force the darkness into the shadows and ultimately into the light, and there is a very powerful universal law that begins to operate. And it is very simply that darkness cannot survive in the presence of the light. It gets transmuted from the higher vibratory consciousness rate of the light into the light itself. But the process begins with bringing it out of the darkness. So both on a collective level and on an individual level, this is happening. And so it can be a pretty rough ride. But like I said earlier, if you learn to go with it, and I spent the whole second half of my book just describing in detail how to be in perfect harmony with this process, because I'll put it this way. I've made it my own personal business to get as many of us ascension ready as possible. I want my friends and family to come along.
Right.
So that's what's going on.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so I know you mentioned the Illuminati. But if they succeed in holding, millions of people here and for some whatever
they're
kind of—
They're not going to succeed.
Yeah.
The game is over.
You say, okay.
Sorry, darkness cannot survive in the presence of light. Now, it's taking some time to play itself out.
So what happens to those people? What happens to them during the ascension? I mean, do they get recycled to go do something else?
That's a great question. Law of One makes it very clear that everyone is going to be, as they term it, harvested. And that is to either taken to another third dimensional planet if they're not ascension ready, and harvested into the fourth dimension if they are. That is, with the exception of all but the darkest, all but the most evil psychopaths on the planet. Sorry, but they're going to have to stay here and face the Earth changes. They've got too much karma to work out. Now, that's not me saying that. That's the Law of One saying that. And I would not want to be those guys.
You call it harvested. Got you. It reminds me of a movie called Left Behind, too, with I think Nicolas Cage is in it. Wow. Okay, let me ask you this. And so let me see. It left my mind here, but it'd pop in my mind here in a minute. Okay, let me ask you about, let's go back to how much of this is biblical? Have you looked at that?
I'm not a student of the Bible, yet I have some biblical quotes in there. I have a chapter where, what's it called? I forget what it's called. Contact in the Desert. And in that chapter, I refer to a Canadian scientist, a guy by the name of W.B. Smith, who way back in the 1950s was actually given the job by the Canadian government, first time ever, and the only time ever to my awareness, to research this thing. Well, he decided that, you know, it's one thing to listen to what pilots have to say about it, you know, their contacts with UFOs and stuff like that. He wanted to find some real contactees to see what they had to say. And so back in the 1950s, in California, in Joshua Tree, there was an annual UFO conference that was really a big deal. It attracted generally in the neighborhood of about 5,000 people, many of who claimed to be contactees. And so so he began to communicate with some of these people, and they were all telling a very similar story. They were all talking about what I'm calling this galactic super wave coming in, and what it's going to do is dramatically raise the vibratory rate of the planet. It's going to stir things up a bit, and it's a necessary thing in order to prepare the planet for ascension, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, you know, just this familiar theme that began to show itself back in the 1950s. Well, W.B. Smith didn't stop there. He wanted to know if this was really real. Were these people telling the truth, or were they just all cooking up a story? So what he did is he created a 100-part questionnaire where if you were a contactee, you would answer it in one way. You can't fake it. And if you were not, you would be exposed. And so he weeded them out this way. And he also came into contact with a guy by the name of George Hunt Williamson, I think his name was. His name is eluding me right now.
Say that again, because your audio cut out, Bob. Just say that again.
Yeah. Well, there was a guy who wrote a book called Road in the Sky. And I think his name was George Hunt Williamson or something like that. I wonder if I can find his book here. Probably not. But that's okay. I think his last name was Williamson. And so he was a contactee. And he was saying the same thing from his contacts, that there's this energy coming in. It's going to impact everyone and everything. In other words, it's going to stir things up a bit, quite a bit, is a necessary preparation for ascension. And in the book, the Road in the Sky, which was written back in 1959, he gave a bunch of biblical quotes that speak in great detail to the nature of the ascension. And so you add that to the fact that it's not just our Bible that talks about ascension, but there's at least 34 other cultures that are talking about the same thing, in using their version of truth. So this whole thing about ascending into fourth density has been around for a long, long time. It's not something that's new, and it's not something that, you know, a bunch of New Age airheads are cooking up. And I'm not a New Age airhead, by the way. I was just blown away when I read the details in that.
You said it's George Williamson.
I think it's George Hunt Williamson.
I wrote it down. I'm going to try to find it. Uh-huh. I wrote that down. Thank you for, I love book suggestions. I love things like that. Okay, so let me ask you something. So I understand what you're saying. You're saying like this wave of energy and unconditional love and things like that are washing over us. But every time, you know, you turn on the news and there's mass shootings and all kinds of murders and things like that. I mean, is that being caused by some sort of manipulation to counter that energy or?
I could say yes, but I could say I don't want to go there.
I'm thinking
too.
About mind control. Is what I'm saying.
I think you're onto something there.
Okay,
I don't know how deeply I want to dig into that, but I will not disagree with you. But it's like I said, you know, much earlier in the show here, when the secret space program sent their crews out there, the positive members became more positive, the less positive ones became more negative. And what I mean by that is the displacement process. It starts stirring up the darkness within us, both the collective darkness on the planet and the individual darkness within each and every person. And so if you're not vibrating with unconditional love and joyfulness and inner peace on a 24/7 basis, and that pretty much describes all of us here on third dimensional Earth, to some degree or another, we have some unfinished business. We have some karma that needs to get resolved. And so that's the fear, that's the resentment, that's the, you know, all that lower vibratory stuff. And so what the displacement process is doing, higher vibratory energy is absolutely going to create this displacement process where it begins bringing this stuff to the surface. You can't hold it down anymore. You can't keep it suppressed. You can't deny it anymore. And so the only opportunity that's available to us is to learn how to consciously deal with this. And that's my point of showing how to transmute that energy from life detracting energy into life enhancing energy. So you can raise your vibratory rate, so you can get on with it, and you can discover what your true purpose in coming here in the first place was. And here again, Ketan is so important. I spend the entire second half of the book just delving into this in great detail. It's like I said, it's my intention to, I don't want to leave anybody hanging. I want to show you that you have within you the ability to transmute this energy, and I'm going to show you how to do it.
Yeah, your book is amazing. And I have a few more questions, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, go for it.
To ask you about, let me ask you, okay, so, you know, we hear stories, like I find one story fascinating about the kids that were over in Africa, all the school kids, and they saw this, you know, being and a UFO and all the stuff is like a mass sighting over there among all these children. But it basically told them it was a positive message. Okay. But there's been other examples like that throughout history. I'm thinking about Valiant Thor, and that was supposedly in Washington. Talked to Dr. Frank Stranges, was trying to give us things to help us live longer, to improve our health and give us, you know, free energy, things like that, which was turned down by our government, supposedly. Do you believe that there have been beings trying to talk to people in our government to change things for the better?
Well, way back in the 1950s, I make the point that they weren't getting, well, let's say they were getting nowhere and fast trying to talk to the governments. And so they decided that it would be far more useful to reveal themselves to contactees who are more spiritually aware, who are more able to handle it. And so that's exactly what they did. And that's what my chapter detailing the work of W.B. Smith and the contact in the desert and all that is really about. Going into some of the detail about some of the ETs, and Ketan, I'll just say it, there's many, perhaps millions of ETs here on the planet, many of them whom are aware that they're ETs, many of whom are not aware, but at the appropriate moment, they will wake up and remember who they are and why they're here. They're here to help with the awakening process. This is something that's been going on, to my awareness, at least since the 1950s. And I suspect it's been going on prior to that, too.
Interesting there. Let me ask you about the Dracos and the reptilian colony in Antarctica. We hear a lot of things about Antarctica, and for some reason, you know, government officials are going down there and things like that. We hear about that. But have you ever seen any evidence of them uncovering, you know, maybe a previous civilization, some pyramids down there or anything like that? Has anything like that ever come across your eyes?
Well, I wish I could have been there to see, the ancient builder race 2.6 billion years ago came to Antarctica, built a city, and the ruins of that city are still there. It goes much deeper than that, too. In the secret space program is where the bulk of this information comes from. And there's just so much more detail on just what happened on Maldek and what the details were of how they destroyed their planet and how previous to that the ancient builder race had been keeping the peace for 2 billion years. I go into all the detail in the book, but, you know, you can only cover so much in a short interview here.
Let me ask you something about this ancient builder race. Were they going out in space or no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They went all throughout the, not only our solar system, including building obelisks and pyramids and domes on the moon, on our moon, which Richard Hoagland brought out in the early 1990s, but also within the local 52 star cluster, where they built their obelisks, their domes, their pyramids, their cities, and whatever, all throughout the local 52 star cluster. So they've been around the block, so to speak, many, many times. And they're still doing their thing, I'm sure.
This is my last question. When you talked about the Nazis and things, and we know that they went down to Antarctica and they were doing some things down there, and you mentioned the Draco reptilians, and also the Nordics were down there. I mean, do you believe that the Nazis were working with the reptilians, or were they working with the Nordics only, or what? I never can get a straight.
No, they were working with the Draco reptilians. And so to really make the point here, they did lose the ground war, obviously. And so that's why really more than anything, I had so much trouble trying to figure out that what circling the Capitol in 1952 was actually the Nazis. Because even though they lost the ground war in Europe, they did win the space war. And so, you know, I had heard from a guy named Al Bielik that the Germans actually went to the moon in 1947. And when I first heard that, I said, Al, I don't believe you. They lost the war. Come on. Got a hold of every interview of Al Bielik and books that I could get my hands on, and the time has been a great revealer that what he was coming out with some, I think, very useful and accurate information. But the one exception that at the moment I didn't believe the Germans went to the moon in 1947, turns out they did. They've been to Mars. They've been not only throughout our solar system, but throughout our galaxy. And so in 1955, we joined with them, and so have we. You say, been there and done that? Yeah, we've been throughout our galaxy, not only our galaxy, but neighboring galaxies too. This is what you can do when the true technology is, this will be revealed to us when this all comes out. When will it come out? Well, hopefully soon.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that the Nazis, or even us today, have traveled interdimensionally, like went to other dimensions?
I don't know about interdimensionally, but all throughout the galaxies on the third dimension.
Time travel?
Time travel, yeah, that's no big deal. Everybody's got that one. But the thing about traveling interdimensionally is that you have to, that's a function of your consciousness. You have to be able to change your conscious wavelength. And if you're going up in the dimensional worlds, you have to be able to change into a shorter wavelength, a much higher frequency. And along with that, there's a series of rotations that amount to 245 degree rotations, adding up to 90 degrees. That in combination with changing your conscious wavelength will put you, well, you're going to have a rather amazing experience. The visual rate would be that you will very rapidly go through the colors of the rainbow if someone was here watching you. And then after you've gone through the red, orange, yellow, the Roy G. Biv stuff, then what's going to happen is that you're just going to disappear into a ball of light. You are out of this world at this point, and you will reappear in whatever dimensional world that you've tuned to, and you will be just as real there as you are here, only if you're going into the higher worlds, you better be ready for it, because it's a much higher vibratory world. You know, you can't bring the low consciousness stuff of fear and resentment and all that into the higher vibratory worlds, because you're not going to be able to stay there. You have to be ascension ready in order to do it. And so there is a great awakening, and that's the whole point of my book, that is going on here. And those who are able to catch the wave are going to be in for a rather amazing experience. But not to worry, because those who are not ready are going to be, they're going to be taken care of. So there's really no problems. If you begin to see the bigger picture, I would say that this is a time of celebration. It's a time to, wow, some really good things are going to be happening here. And yes, I'm aware you turn on the 6 o'clock news and you hear about mass shootings, you hear this, that, and whatever.
They need to turn that off.
Well, I think that's a good idea. But what I'm suggesting is that it's part of the awakening process. The darkness has to come out of the shadows and be exposed to the light. Then and only then can it be transmuted into the light. And yeah, it's not always going to be an easy ride, but it's an absolutely necessary one. How easy or how difficult it is just depends on how willing you are to discover and to master your innate ability to transmute lower vibratory energy of fear and resentment into higher vibratory energy of unconditional love and joyfulness and inner peace. It's all within us.
Very well said, Bob. His book is called Catching the Ascension Wave, Everything You Need to Know About the Coming Great Awakening. Why don't you tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or any other projects that you're going to be working on?
Well, first of all, just go to Amazon. You can order my book there. And if you want to find out more about me, just go to my website, bobfrizzell.com. Maybe I should spell Frizzell, B-O-B-F-R-I-S-S-E-L-L, bobfrizzell.com. And you can find out about me. But I'll tell you what, you're going to learn an awful lot about me just by ordering and reading the book. And by the way, my website is given in the book, so you can contact me from there if you wish.
Yeah, this book is really, really good. Bob Frizzell, my special guest. Bob, it's been a pleasure. Many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Oh, you're welcome, K-Town, and thanks so much for having me. I mean, you know, I get to spend an hour with you talking about my favorite topics. Yes, I very much appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.